See committee to order. Let the record note that it's April 12th, 2011, and it is 1 p.m. First bill on our agenda is Senate File 471, Senator Newman. Senator Newman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By way of introduction, Mr. Chairman, I have Darcy Erickson with me, who is an attorney representing a number of the cities that are involved in this particular program. She's seated to my left, and Mr. Scott Atkinson, who is with Diversion Solutions and is the vendor that is involved in this program. And Mr. Chairman, before we get started, I do have an amendment I would like to have offered, if I might, which would put the bill in the order that I would require. It's the A1 amendment. If someone could offer that for me, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Howell.
Mr. Chair, do we have to wait until we have a quorum here to offer that amendment?
Yes, we take to take action. Can we move the amendment? Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay.
As soon as we get a quorum, I'll move that for you.
Mr. Chairman, I could then just begin to address the bill, and we'll take up the amendment as soon as we have a quorum. Mr. Chairman, members, this particular bill involves the extension of a pilot program which allows individuals who have had their driving privileges revoked for a variety of reasons to get their driving privileges back and pay off their fines on a payment plan in effect. And this is a pilot program that has already been in place for a number of cities and is due to sunset. And the bill was brought to me with a request to extend the sunset and then also to allow counties to become involved in the program in addition to the cities that are outlined in statute. When we get to the amendment, I would indicate, Mr. Chairman, that the purpose of the amendment is to clarify a potential ambiguity so that we all understand that we are dealing with a number of counties in addition to the cities that are outlined in the bill.
Okay, Senator Newman, just let the record show that we do have a quorum, and we'll have Senator Howe offer the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you'd like it to be in.
Mr. Chair, I'd offer the A1 amendment. I'd move that.
Senator Howe moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, if you look at the A1 amendment, what you will find is that we are simply inserting the word counties and making jurisdictions plural. So it really is just a cleanup amendment. It doesn't do anything other than clarify a potential ambiguity in the original bill. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would defer to Ms. Erickson for further explanation of the bill.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name for the record, please.
Sure. Thank you. Darcy Erickson. I am an assistant city attorney with the cities of Invergrove Heights, South St. Paul, and West St. Paul, which are pilot cities in this program. We are here today requesting an extension of the program for an additional 2 years. Basically, the purpose of this program is to get chronic suspended and revoked drivers valid. It gives those persons who want the opportunity to clean up their court fines and fees that are affecting their driver's license status and allows them to obtain that valid driver's license while doing so.
Senator Newman.
With that explanation, Mr. Chairman, I have no further things to address to the committee. I do have Mr. Atkinson here to answer any questions you may have about the vendor, but with that, I have no further information.
And this is a program that has worked well in the past, and I see the fiscal note. There is no fiscal impact.
There is no fiscal impact, Mr. Chairman, and the information that I have is that there's been a 75, I think, to an 80% success ratio with this program in the past. Perhaps Mr. Atkinson could address that.
Sure.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Atkinson from Diversion Solutions. When we first developed this program with our pilot cities, we were looking and anticipating a success rate of about 15%. And we thought at 15%, we would be very, very happy in keeping 15% of the people active and within good standing within our program. Our first full year was last year with this program. And when we finally tallied all of our numbers, our success rate is we have 77% of the participants that have actively come into the program are still active and in good standing within the program. We hope we can keep that going for the next 2 years.
Well, when programs are successful and they work well, we want to extend that and give even greater opportunity for those successes throughout the state. So appreciate Senator Newman bringing this bill forward. And Senator Perry? Did you have a question?
Yeah, well, I was just going to move the bill.
Oh, okay.
Or are you... Senator Howe, or
got a question,
Senator Howe?
Mr. Chairman, this bill has been requested by Senator Limerick, and so the motion would be to refer it to the Judiciary Committee.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Howe,
Mr. Atkinson, can you tell me what kind of fiscal impact this has had on the on our state so far?
Mr. Atkinson,
thank you. The last year in our first year as a pilot, we brought in. Back to the state in fines and fees paid was about $417,000 in our first year pilot. The first quarter of this year, we have received about $180,000 worth of fines and fees so we're averaging about $63,000 per month without any expansion on the pilot itself. And now we're looking to move toward expansion of the pilot in a small expansion. And the anticipation is anywhere between $1.5 and $2 million in fiscal year 2011.
Any other questions? Senator Perry?
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 471 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stephen.
Before that, I had a question. Sorry, I wasn't at the table. I was just curious, and I appreciate the conversation about the success of this, but could you just remind the committee, so you're a private entity that's running this in the pilot cities, and could you just explain that a little bit?
Yeah.
Mr. Atkinson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben. We are a private, not a for-profit company. Mm-hmm. What we do is we develop diversion programs with county attorneys, city attorneys. Now, of course, with this project, we're working with DVS and some other state agencies. We manage the program for them. All decisions for us and for participants within the program come from Department of Vehicle Services and the city attorneys themselves.
And Mr. Chair, I'm just curious if DVS, have they thought about, I mean, is there definitely a need to contract out this work to do it through your business, through a business, or... Could you explain more what you provide that the state couldn't provide directly, or maybe Ms. McCormick could?
I see Ms. McCormick is here. Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, and we very much value the partnership that we have in working on this DL diversion program. One of the reasons that we have had to not expand it as widely as some might suggest is because of the fact that our staff need to, because of the complexity involved with many of these driving records, it all has to be done individually by hand, and so it does involve our staff. But I think we believe that trying to accomplish what the program has been able to accomplish in working with these individuals, we would not have the resources available to do that. And our hope would be with our new system that we're, MNLARS, the work we're hoping to do, that then it will not have to be this manual process that we're doing right now. And that's our goal. So we're moving towards that and slowly expanding the project. And that's why that we're adding counties. We've had several counties request that they be part of the program. We think it's worthwhile, but we're not able at this point in time to open it up the way we might once we had our system in place. But certainly it's valuable. Our partnership is valuable. The classes and the program that is being operated, we think, has made a difference.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that information, Ms. McCormick. So it's my understanding then that there's nothing in this legislation that in the future would prohibit the DVS from doing this if the agency is able to do it themselves.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, I think that we do have driver evaluators that we do use right now, but we do believe that this program is helpful because they hold classes at different times that we might not be able to do with them, so that people are working and they're still able to participate in the program. So I think there's some value in the way this program is operating, but certainly we agree that it's a good partnership, and we need to look at the actual records and make sure it meets with all the statutes and any compliance is done through DVS. So it would always have to involve DVS, but we believe there's value in the classrooms and the fact that they can hold classes and work with these participants in the hours they're not working and they're available to participate. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, I would also indicate that this program will sunset on June of 2013 as to one part of it, and another part in December of 2014. And in addition, a report is required to come back to the legislature regarding this program. So you will have an opportunity to revisit it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Newman. That's good. We want to keep track of it, but the success has been good, and appreciate your efforts on that again to extend this. Any other questions? Senator Scherer?
Thank you. Ms. McCormick, don't go away. This may be for you or for Mr. Atkinson. Thank you. I'm curious to know, I heard some numbers about fines, fees that were recaptured through this program. Could you describe the contract with Financial Crime Services, how you are paid, and is it on a percentage of what you collect and get returned for the state? And then furthermore, for that fee, how many people do you employ?
Mr. Atkinson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon. The fee for the program is $300 to come into the program. And that money and the program money for us to support and manage the program is paid 100% by the participant themselves. Now, for a person to come into the program, they have to have a driving after revocation or driving after suspension citation, with either within the system currently or one that where they have just, were just stopped. And one of the incentives in the program for an individual to come in is that the city attorney will forgive that driving after revocation or driving after suspension citation once they have fulfilled the requirements of the program. So that's how we make our money. As far as how many staff personnel do we have, we currently have 6 full-time personnel on staff. We average, each person averages about 1,200 phone calls per week that they are supporting and helping somebody else. And one of the other support mechanisms that we do is we carry a lot of call-outs for people to help make them make their payments and to remind them that they have to be in good standing with the program to keep going and stuff. And I believe there's one other piece to the question. I did not write it down. I apologize.
Senator Sher?
Thank you. No, you've answered my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Senator Perry has moved that Senate File 471 be recommended to pass and, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to Judiciary Committee. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Next up, we have Senate File 395, Senator Daley.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, Senate File 395, has strong bipartisan support, as shown by the unanimous approval last month in the House Transportation Committee when Representative Erdahl presented the companion bill. I want to take a moment to thank my fellow Senate authors, Senator Wieger and Senator Reinert, who unfortunately is not here at the moment, as well as Senator Gazelka and Senator Lilly. Thank you. There was no military turnout at the hearing, which is the very reason we're suggesting this change, because they're deployed, they're stationed far, all over the world, all over the country, and we're standing here on their behalf today. This proposed bill provides that the Minnesota driver's license of a service member on active military service outside the state or the license of their spouse would remain valid in full force and effect for 1 year following the service member's separation or discharge from active military service and until their birthday in the 4th year following renewal. 3 quick main points. Currently, renewals must be made within 90 days of discharge. We've received information on a number of cases where this has been a hardship on families, and in some cases, service members were unable to make that change in the 90-day period. This proposed change would allow them an additional period of time to make it back within that year. And now that we're getting into some of the details here, I just recalled I touched base with Senate Counsel this morning, and it's pretty important to have done this at the beginning instead of now. If you're looking at the language, you're going to notice that some of what I've just mentioned isn't there. There's a delete all amendment that everyone should have received. Just want to make sure that everyone's gotten that. It's through the revisor's office. It'd be 296, I believe, are the last 3 numbers on that. So make sure that everyone's got that delete all amendment so we're all working off the same sheet of paper here.
It's Senator Daley, it's the A11 amendment.
A11, okay.
Having it passed out now. Senator Gazelka moves the A11 amendment, delete everything amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we have the bill in the form that you would like.
There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The biggest change here is that there were some special situations. Let me look up the exact phrase that Patricia McCormick over at DPS sent. This original bill would have required significant programming. As that was a concern, we didn't want significant programming. We didn't want any fiscal impact or fiscal note that was going to cost anything. With this delete all amendment, there is no fiscal impact. There's the fiscal note would reflect a no cost.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator Gazelka moves Senate File 395 as amended be recommended to pass and move to the floor. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Good luck, Senator Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Next up is Senate File 499, Senator Howell. Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair and committee members, first I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
That's off the A1 amendment. To the amendment, Senator Hall.
This amendment just allows DPS to charge a fee for $2 for each certificate for people who complete, participants who complete the online driver's education. There was a small fiscal note of, I believe, $30,000 for some rulemaking, and this would just allow a recovery of that fee and then to terminate that fee once the funds have been, the fiscal note has been completed, paid back.
Would you like to move the amendment?
I'll move that amendment, the A1.
Senator Hall moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Hall, to the
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you. Along with me today, I have two people who would like to discuss the online driver's education and why that option makes sense for residents and consumers that live in Minnesota. Before turning it over to Gary Seifrin and Chief Operating Officer of DriversEd.com and Debbie Pruholm, a local owner of a driving school here in Minnesota, I would like to make just a few brief comments about this bipartisan bill that has been co-authored by several of you on this committee. Presently in Minnesota, students need to complete 30 hours of classroom driver's education in addition to 6 hours of behind-the-wheel driver's ed. This bill will not affect the behind-the-wheel portion of driver's education. All this bill does is permit online driver's education as an option to the 30 hours of classroom work that is required. The hands-on, one-on-one student-teacher behind-the-wheel training will remain the same. This legislation is not a mandate in any way. It would simply provide parents and students one additional option regarding classroom work. Many parents may choose to have the traditional classroom method, and that is fine. But others may find the convenience and flexibility of this online option to be more desirable. Consumers should not be denied options because others are resistant to reform at all costs. Perhaps the most important, any online program that would be offered in Minnesota would have to be approved by the Department of Public Safety. Any such program would obviously be specific to our own state rules and regulations. Only if the program met all the criteria outlined by DPS would such a program be able to offer here in Minnesota. I strongly support strong oversight by the Department of Public Safety. Opposition to use this technology seems to come from those who benefit from the status quo. As I've indicated, many families will choose to utilize either public schools or private driving schools for the 30 hours of classroom instruction. All students will still need to take the 6-hour behind-the-wheel training that is mandated by law. Some private driving school owners have now recognized the benefits of the new technology and are willing to work with it to improve teaching methods and options for students. DPS conducted a review of studies nationwide, and the report found no evidence indicating whether teens who receive internet-based instruction were more or less likely to commit traffic violations or be involved in crashes. I actually believe the use of online technology will be an improvement to the way students learn about driver's education, and the interactive visual approach is more in tune with the way young people learn these days compared to how you or I might have learned years ago. I would appreciate your support of Senate File 499. With that, I'll have our testifiers. Mr. Siphon.
Welcome to the committee, if you'd state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Gary Ziffern. I'm the co-founder and COO of DriverZ.com. And I would like to echo Senator Howe's excellent summary that the core idea here is that online driver's education for the classroom piece would simply be one option for Minnesota families. And of course, this does not affect the driver's training piece, the real concrete skill building behind the wheel, the 6 hours that's mandated currently. DPS, in a study here in Minnesota, in a study in 2009, found no evidence to date indicating whether teens who receive internet-based instruction are more or less likely to commit traffic violations or to be involved in crashes. And there are a mounting body of evidence that also supports online driver's education for the classroom piece. Even NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, in their most recent study in 2009, also recognizes the advent of alternative delivery methods, that is to say, online parent-taught and correspondence programs. There was a study as early as 2003 by the California Department of Motor Vehicles that reached the same conclusion, and I can tell you that the technology is much improved from 2003. There are more studies, and I'm happy to provide those for you. Importantly, DriverZ.com has had our curricula and our delivery technology evaluated by the Driving School Association of the Americas, DSAA, and we're the only provider of driver education to have our curricula approved by DSAA and the Road Safety Educators Association. DriverZ.com is currently licensed in 13 states to provide online driver education, with one exception that's on this list, and you'll notice Minnesota. We currently are approved to provide, for homeschool students only, a booklet, a correspondence course that we send over the U.S. Postal Service to allow homeschooled students to take the classroom portion of the course. And strangely, we're not allowed to provide our online course, which obviously is a much more robust educational experience for the student, the parents, the family. One thing you'll notice from this list is that of the 26 states in the U.S. that require formal driver education, half of them have recognized online delivery. I just want to pause on that for a second. This might be a surprise to some of the committee members. Not all states require that people, before they get behind the wheel, actually do driver education, neither the classroom nor the behind-the-wheel driver's training. Here in Minnesota, once you turn 18, there are no requirements for driver education. So it's best to think of online driver's education as not a convenience issue, but rather as an accessibility issue. So for those students who currently simply opt out of driver's education totally, simply wait it out until they turn 18, because they can't fit it into their schedules, because of the expense, for a whole host of reasons, this would give them an option to opt in to driver's education. Another thing you'll notice is that a lot of these states, California, Florida, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Texas, have immense populations. So really, we cover very nearly 120 million Americans that have the option, that are allowed to take online driver education. And we simply just want to offer that same option to Minnesota families. Again, just as an option, not a mandate. This is an example of the DriverZ.com site. I invite you all to visit. Interestingly and importantly, we're the official provider of online driver's education to large institutions like the Texas Virtual School, the Florida Virtual School, Region 4 Educational Service Center. And I could continue, as well as charter schools and driving schools around the country. So in states where online driver's education has been adopted and recognized, we end up partnering with local driving schools. I want to emphasize that our course is not simply a book that's uploaded online and read online. It is a course, a robust multimedia interactive experience with 3D case studies, activities, modular course design, section reviews, quizzes, punctuated assessments, which means the student cannot progress without interacting with the course and reinforcing what they've learned, online movies, and multilingual student support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, currently in English, Spanish, Russian, and Vietnamese.
Senator Gazalka, excuse me, we'll take some questions as we go here.
Yeah, Senator thank you, Gazalka. Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that was appropriate. But is the test that they have to take, the written test, is that after the training or before, as far as the course material? They take a written test, is that before or after they take the material?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Zephyr.
Senator Gazalka?
Yeah.
The course material precedes the written test at DPS.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair. Have any results as far as do the people that take this course do better or worse? I mean, I'm guessing they do better, but I'm just curious what the results are.
Mr. Zephyr?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazalka, you're very intuitive. Yes, the studies that we do have show that students who take the online course, and again, we're not the only ones providing an online course. There's huge variety in quality, but the studies that have been done show performance on the written test, which again is no substitute for actual driving skills, but performance on the written test, those that take the courses online have shown to perform better on the written exams.
Senator Gazelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just because overall I see how education has the potential to shift. You know, and this is just another example of where we can see that, at least for many, many students, online material can be very, very effective. Thank you.
I would like to spend a few minutes and pause over security. So I know that some have questions about the security of online courses. And I want to emphasize that our security procedures have met with the approval of regulatory agencies in 13 states. And there is a wide variety of ways of approaching security issues. To my mind, the core issue is parent involvement, of course. It's the parent who's paying for the course, and it's the parent who has an investment in their student participating in the course. In addition to that, of course, we have a whole host of security measures, everything that range from periodic questions that are culled from the enrollment and registration form to, in some instances, where we do third-party verification, where we can connect with databases from the state and get information that the student has not provided for us that we can also test the student on throughout the course, to biometric solutions, to in-person verification. So there are a whole host of ways of ensuring the identity of the participant, but of course, the families, the parents, have an investment in their students participating. So there has not been any, in the states where we've been operating since 2003, there have been no instances or problems with fraud. And I don't believe that the DPS here in their report that they found in states fraud with online courses, concrete examples of that kind of fraud. The core idea here is by making driver's education more accessible to more families in Minnesota, it will ultimately increase participation and contribute to public safety. Again, once you're 18, there's no mandate that you take any driver's education at all, no classroom, no behind the wheel. So by increasing accessibility with one more option for Minnesota families, it will encourage more students to participate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Prudhomme, if you'd identify yourself.
May I switch so I can access the computer?
Certainly.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, we do have a handout for the committee members.
We'll have a committee page hand that out for us. And Ms. Prudhomme, if you would identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Debbie Prudhomme, and I am a driving school owner here in Minnesota. I also have been really lucky in my life to be able to work nationally on driver education. In 2010, I participated on a NHTSA team that went in to assess the driver ed systems in two states, in Maryland and Oregon. So I have a good background in this, and I just want the members of the committee to know that this is only an option, as Gary had mentioned. I also would like to frame the discussion that we're about to have in terms of we're talking about a method of education. That's the only thing that we're talking about. And while driversed.com is an example of that type of method and that delivery system, as Mr. Sifrin mentioned, there are many online providers. And just as in that that array of online providers where they vary in quality, so do our current delivery systems with our traditional classrooms. And then also just to mention that here today, there's no one that's speaking for all the driving school owners in Minnesota. And what I'd like to focus on is where Mr. Sifrin left off about the increased participation in driver education. I went back and looked at the actual numbers, and they're quite shocking. About 60,000 teens participate in driver education annually from all delivery systems, including public, private, high school, and commercial schools. I went to the Minnesota census numbers of 2000, and I found that of 15 and 16-year-olds, there's 150,000 of those folks. And so we have about 90,000 people on average opting out of driver education. That's over one half of the eligible students. And why do these people opt out? Well, I mean, that is a little bit up for debate, but from my experience, I've taught 12,000 students myself personally in the classroom. That's my specialty is classroom instruction. I think sometimes it's time, it's money, it's family circumstances, and it's sometimes associated with where they live. Well, how can we get them to opt in? How can we get even a small percentage of 90,000 people to take more formal education? I believe that is with accessibility of education that we're describing here today. And there's also other benefits, including that English as a second language learners, they have the benefit of being able to go back and relook at modules. And then also just to mention that multicultural education is identified in the national standards as to be essential for all states. And then regarding the cost and affordability, I believe it will be stabilized. I don't see that that without something to control the cost of driver's ed, that we're going to be able to get more people to opt in. So I believe that it is more affordable and it will be stabilized. And I know that you'll agree with me that the fuel prices really are a concern for all of us, and especially that family that's having to make a 30 or 60 mile round trip 10 times. I mean, on a vehicle that gets 20 miles to the gallon, you can do the math, and that's expensive. And then also very important is this is meeting the students where they are. These students today, they favor interactive technology as part of the educational process. And not only do they favor it, they actually expect it. And when you don't deliver that, then you lose them. You lose them with a talking head in front of a classroom. And as I said, there's a lot of a variety of people who are doing lecture-based training. And it's really getting a little bit of an outdated kind of mode of education. And then just to summarize why I, as a driving school, support this, why I, after 15 years as a driving school owner, why I would support something that I feel this is beneficial, is because it's not a safety issue. And I do know other driving school owners that support it as well. And there's a big array of opinion. Most of the time we're going to find that it's a business model issue, and I completely understand that. But you have the ambivalent. You have the owner or instructor that looks to the future and embraces what technology can bring us. And then you have the people who want status quo. And we need to encourage all of us to move towards the future. And then also remember that Department of Public Safety is going to regulate anything that we offer here in Minnesota. And reputable programs, they will encourage regulation, they will encourage monitoring, and those will be the type of providers that we want here in Minnesota. And just to say that, you know, we can't hold back the future. It's here. We got to get ahead of it. We want to mold it. We want to make the most of it. And I am in no way, shape, or form suggesting a trade-off for convenience for safety. I would not do that. But we do need to meet these students where they are. They deserve that. They are citizens. And again, this is an option for them.
Ms. Prudhomme, could I interrupt you to ask a question during
the
presentation?
Yes, I'm done.
You mentioned that you have personally instructed in the classroom about 12,000 students in as part of your profession there. And just wondering, you also mentioned that there that it seems that the classroom has become an outmoded model, or are you telling us then that it's less effective, has become less effective over time, or could you tell us a little more about your thinking as far as the classroom model and its effectiveness, and not necessarily in comparison to an online model, but are you seeing something that we should be noting as far as the classroom model?
Well, I could say that we should encourage all providers to be using updated methods in their classrooms. You know, there's many driving schools here in Minnesota that strictly teach out of the Minnesota Manual as a textbook. And that's not providing a foundation of educational tools. So classroom is a very important way of learning. And there will be those students that will choose to go to that type of learning environment. Now, I will say that if you are offering classroom, the traditional classroom, you're obligated to be doing that well. And that is usually using computers and technology and bringing in those resources that help today's learner be able to learn. So I don't want to disregard classroom completely, because that's also not a fair statement. But I think if it's going to be done, it needs to be done well.
I think we can all agree with that. So, any other questions? Okay, if you want to proceed with your testimony, or
no, I've concluded that. Would you like to mention the letter that I had gotten a letter from a parent this morning? I think this has been passed out to you, and I know that it's just a paragraph long, but just in summary, this woman called me a couple days ago, yesterday in fact, and she was her daughter has two classes to make up, and they're a very busy family. They had a lot of pressures on their family, and she was so upset with me. She said, I can't believe that we don't have an online option to be able to do some of this. This is just ridiculous. And she went on to describe her experience in California. So she's put some thoughts here on paper. One of the things that really struck me was that she says, I also believe that the disconnect between student and parent during the process is detrimental to the student and unfair to the parent. And I think that's something we need to consider, that online, in the home, and that type of thing, the parents can be more involved. And I think that's very important to consider for them.
Next up is Ms. Puff. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, senators. Today I'm here as a local educator who is concerned about options for Minnesota students. Thank you. My name is Ellen Puff, and I am the president of Mrs. Puff's Driving School. Currently in the five-state region, the other states that allow online classroom instruction include Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa. The reasons are not only student convenience, but parent convenience, student access to information, and it is considerably more affordable. I am a local educator, as I said. I'm the company founder. I'm a veteran Minnesota educator with a master's degree in education. I have designed and implemented curriculum, and I've aligned my curriculum with state standards. I will also work with the Minnesota chapter of Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, and I will partner with them to ensure full compliance with the law, and also to engage students in an interactive forum. I will also work closely with DPS to ensure public safety and to win their approval with curriculum. To that end, I've already established a relationship with the main curriculum approver for the state of Minnesota, and we have had multiple conversations on curriculum already. As stated earlier, there was a February 2009 Minnesota DPS study for the legislature, and the two main areas of concern were quality of instruction and security and fraud. We at Mrs. Puff's Driving School, which is MinnesotaDriversEd.com, will implement safeguards to ensure that teens become safe drivers. To that end, we will offer Minnesota Department Public of Safety approved curriculum. We will monitor computer time. It has to be less than 3 hours within a 24-hour period. That is a rule already in Minnesota. It will be assessment-based. Students will not be able to move further into the curriculum until they have achieved 80% on the quizzes. There will be parental involvement, activities, oversight, written acknowledgement that their child has completed the course. And we talk about student accountability, teacher accountability, and parent accountability. I think it's crucial that if the student is using their parent's credit card, that their parent should be abreast and informed of their child's progress. And also, there is an element that we can use in my particular curriculum where the instruction will be teacher-led. There could be an interactive feature. I would like to engage the students. As a veteran educator, I have seen students in the classroom with their little BlackBerries looking at Facebook in the classroom itself. If you have 42 students in a room, which some St. Paul classrooms now have today, it's very difficult to stop the room to yell at one student when you have to engage 39 other students. With the increase in technology and software, classrooms are already using technology. Smart boards are in effect. Moundsview Public School next year will be using an interactive feature for their students, for their high school students. They will be using Moodle. So I will engage the students. The 2009 DPS report to the Minnesota legislature found that students who took internet driving education scored as well as classroom-instructed students on an end-of-course exam. And in fact, the same report found that there was little research on the efficacy of driver's education in general, even with respect to traditional methods of instructional delivery. And I can tell you, I've looked at the commercial driving schools in Minnesota and looked at their curriculum. Some of the current curriculum does not even correspond to the current Minnesota manual. The pages are incorrect with the worksheets that the students have to do. The beauty of online technology is that we can adjust and change things as they happen. As the manual is reprinted every year, we can adjust it immediately. In Minnesota today, as you heard, homeschooled children can order DPS-approved texts and take online driver's educational quizzes and conduct online activities. McGraw-Hill is one publishing company that has an online quiz that is excellent. The fee for 30 hours of instruction ranges from $35 to $100. I've looked at all of them. None of them are in Minnesota, but hopefully that will change. Other Minnesota students must attend today a commercial or private school, such as a Safeway, a Sears driving school. The fee for 30 hours of instruction and 6 hours of behind the wheel is $385 to $400. And if I could just stop there for a moment and share a personal point of view, I'm the youngest of eight children, and there is no way my parents could have afforded $400 for eight kids.
Ms. Puff.
Yes.
Of that $385 to $400, how much of that would be the actual behind-the-wheel cost of that, and how much of it would you attribute to the actual classroom cost?
Well, from the research, Chairman, from the research that I've conducted, I know the instructors make between $15 and $20 per hour for 6 hours of behind-the-wheel instruction. So on top of that, you would have additional business concerns and expenditures. But just from my breakdown, I know that for the classroom instruction, it's just so much more cost affordable to do it without having to pay for lights and a room rental and a teacher for a few students when you can do it in volume. So to answer your question, the behind the wheel is a component with the commercial driving schools along with the classroom instruction, and together they bundle it, and it is between $385 and $400. Now, in Wisconsin today, you can take the online course for $40. At Mrs. Puff's Driving School, LLC, we will go the extra mile. We will offer additional hours of instruction if required by DPS. We will offer a toll-free number for kids who are in Calumet. We will have a tech support line online so they can email questions to an instructor. And we will do behind-the-wheel referrals throughout the state. So if the parents and the kid are up in Bemidji, they can type in their zip code, and we will refer them to a behind-the-wheel instructor in their area.
Ms. Puff, you talk about we. How many employees do you have or do you envision having should this become law?
Well, I'm a startup business, and currently I have two consultants working for me, but this is a product that could develop overnight, and the volume could be quite large. According to Minnesota Department of Education statistics, from grade 7 through grade 12, there are 320 students between grade 7 and grade 12. Now, I learned yesterday from another presenter, and I have yet to confirm those numbers, that the individual students taking the driver's education class were approximately 50,000.
Senator Wolf, did you have a question?
320 is the total that I came up with the Department of Education.
You're talking in terms of thousands, all right?
Right, 320,000.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have a question. Just wondering, and you brought up your staff. Was questioning. I'm looking at your bio here. In order to be a driver's ed instructor, and I had thought about doing this, entails about 6 months worth of college additional courses. And to my knowledge, at the time, I believe St. Cloud is the only one that licenses instructors. Just wondering, when you say you have consultants and yourself as well, what kind of criteria or qualifications does somebody have to be considered an online instructor or to even be the owner or provider of the course?
Ms. Puff?
Chairman, Senator Wolf, thank you for that question. The curriculum must be approved by the Department of Public Safety, so that is one criteria. I do know one individual who is working for a commercial driving school in the metro area, and she did not have 6 months of training. She took the written test, and she is now teaching in a classroom for a commercial driving school in the metro area. She actually did this within 2 months last year, and she just started working last November.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Suffren would like to answer that, add to that.
If you could contribute, Mr. Steffer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wolf, just to echo what Ms. Puff correctly observed, any requirement for an online provider in Minnesota would ultimately be determined by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. I can comment that in other states there are requirements, one, to be, in some instances, to have an owner's and operator's license of a driving school. I can say for ourselves, my father owned a small driving school in California, and this is where driverzed.com began. Currently, we have 40 behind. We have 40 vehicles on the road, and we employ dozens, I think approaching 50, licensed driving instructors, driver's education instructors, and traffic school instructors. In addition to that, we have a dedicated content development staff, also people who carry masters and things like education, that participate in courseware and design. But again, all of that is subject to the requirements of the Department of Public Safety.
Ms. Puff, you'd like to continue?
I will work closely, again, with the Minnesota chapter of MAD to have monthly webinars. As a teacher, I have been at assemblies where they have conducted presentations with individuals speaking about their experiences with drunk driving. And it's a way to engage the students. I want to share with you, senators, the fact that there has been a huge paradigm shift in education. You cannot ignore technology. The kids do expect it. I'm in the classroom every day. I talk to the kids every day. I talk to the parents every day. And it is a way to not just engage the students, but to really just get them excited about learning. In conclusion, I am will be, hopefully, online driving educational program here. I am the president, and I would like to conclude by saying I care about public safety, too, because I live here, my family lives here, and I will work closely with DPS and with other concerned parties, such as AAA, to ensure that the curriculum is excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Next up, we have Ms. Teens, and why don't we also bring up Mr. Hasten? Same time. Ms. Teens, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Thines, right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Senate members. My name is Cindy Thines. I am an officer of the Minnesota Driving School Association that represents commercial driving schools here in the state of Minnesota. I've been a driving school owner for 10 years. I'm also an instructor for classroom and behind the wheel. The member schools of the association are adamantly opposed to allowing teens to do an option of internet online education at this time. In fact, the issue before us today is united competitors from across the state. I'd like to speak to a little bit about why. We're concerned about the unintended consequences of what this bill could produce in Minnesota. For example, the lack of continuity between classroom and behind the wheel. Classroom instructors have terminology and methods of teaching that they teach in the classroom, and these same instructors will go out and teach behind the wheel. We're concerned that if a classroom student has taken an online course, that once we get them behind the wheel, we'll spend the first few hours just getting them caught up on the terminology and the driving methods that we're going to be using for the next 6 hours. So those important hours that are reviewing something that we're going to be doing future in the behind the wheel will take out of the curriculum that we have set up. So in other words, the 6 hours of behind the wheel, there'll be some time that we're going to have to spend doing review that should have been done in the classroom. The major concern that we have is for safety. We believe that we don't want to compromise safety for convenience. Our challenge is to teach 14, 15, and 16-year-olds defensive driving. Generally, teens are easily distracted, as we know, and they look for the easiest way to get to what they want. After reviewing the various internet driver's education programs currently available, we have not seen any that have a level of user verification that makes us comfortable. Even with using strong biometric security measures, there is still no guarantee that the student is paying attention. Proponents argue that online classes are more convenient. They are correct. I would argue that sometimes safety requires inconveniences. In fact, completing a 30-hour program in less than 10 hours is even more convenient. Texting while driving is also convenient.
Driving home from a bar after having a few drinks is convenient. Wearing a seatbelt or strapping a four-year-old into a booster seat is not convenient, but Minnesota has established that safety is more important than convenience. Parents spend many hours driving their children back and forth to sports practices, music lessons, dance lessons, numerous other activities in their lifetimes. 10 trips to a classroom for driver's education is hardly too much to require to bring them to this important event. Many driving schools serve a small community with a very small profit margin. The average commercial driving school teaches about 300 students a year. If just 25% of the student base would choose an online program, the resulting loss of income would cause those schools to become economically unviable. At that point, the school would have to decide either to close or to raise the cost of their program, including behind the wheel, to make up for the loss. If the school decides to close, there would be no one to provide that behind the wheel training in the local area. This would force parents to drive further distances and possibly pay increased costs for behind the wheel. Again, this would be an unintended consequence. This bill does, as mentioned, have a fiscal note as amended, and it sounds like the fee that will be added will cover that fiscal note. I just want to point out that it would also be an ongoing charge for the Department of Public Safety to be monitoring and approving courses in the future. So this is going to be an additional workload for the Department of Public Safety to just be watching the online program. That'll be a new feature for them. So I just want to point out that'll be an additional money for the Department of Public Safety to have staff for. I want to point out that the Wisconsin Department of Transportation hired a research group to prepare an internet driver education study. Wisconsin currently only allows online in a limited basis through a closely monitored format. The study, which was released in May of last year, is available online to anyone. It gathers information from states that have similar driver's ed requirements as Minnesota. It's important to point out that states such as North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa do not require the 30 hours of classroom for students under the age of 18 as Minnesota does. So we need to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples. Just a few conclusions of the Wisconsin study. Quote, although many benefits are realized, security, learning the materials, and motivation are top barriers to overcome. It is a challenge to driver's ed courses to ensure that the registered student is completing the course and that the student remains motivated and engaged in the class to walk away with the knowledge of course topics and instilled safe driving behaviors. Developing standards to overcome these barriers are key to guarantee novice drivers as well as other drivers to stay safe on the road, unquote. It's also important to point out that in this Wisconsin study as well as the Minnesota study that was prepared in 2009 to the legislature, that both studies did point out that the permit testing rates and the road testing rates were the same. There was no identifiable difference between the test rates between traditional and online classrooms, both studies. What I want to point out is that what these studies lack and what's pointed out in the studies is there is no crash rate data from states that have had online. And what we're saying is that is one of the most important pieces of information that we need to review before we decide to change something in Minnesota. There's two states, Georgia and Virginia, who are starting to collect that information on crash rates to see if there is a substantial difference between the two different delivery methods. Here in Minnesota, we take teen driving very seriously. It's not that we're opposed to change, that we don't want to move forward with technology. In fact, we use plenty of technology in our classrooms with our teachers. It's not that we want to keep the status quo. We want to make sure that we move Minnesota in the safest direction possible for our teens. That's what our motivation is. We want to make sure we take our time, do it right, do it carefully. From the products that we've seen to date, we have not been satisfied. The graduated driver's license program has been carefully structured. We do not feel that a change is necessary at this time. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Hasen.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Chip Hasen, and I'm the owner of Safeway Driving School. Safeway has been graduating teen drivers for over 40 years. We did 4,000 students last year, and we do that in 13 classrooms and community ed programs throughout the Twin Cities area. Safeway happens to agree that different students learn differently and that online courses can be convenient and also effective. There are plenty of online high school courses right now in Minnesota, and there's no reason why driver's ed shouldn't be one of them. But I do have some concerns about this bill. I am concerned about Minnesota instructors. There are about 1,300 instructors, classroom instructors in Minnesota. If half of the students go online, Indiana, just as background, Indiana has had online driver's ed for 18 months, and their best guess right now is that half of the students do the online option. So if in Minnesota half of our students go online, that's 650 instructors that are out of work. There's probably never a good time to consider a bill that might eliminate Minnesota jobs and ship Minnesota revenues to California, but that's what you're considering today, and I just think it needs to be pointed out. I think it's important to review why teens crash. Minnesota Department of Public Safety put out a report to the legislature 2 years ago, and they concluded that teens have tragic crashes because they're immature, because they have a high propensity for risk-taking behavior, they have an illusion of invulnerability, they don't recognize hazards, and they have deficient decision-making. I'm not disparaging our teens when I say this. I'm simply quoting from just one of many studies which conclude exactly the same thing. Knowing this, Minnesota has long required 30 hours of classroom instruction, even though the 40-question knowledge test required to get a driving permit could be taught in 5 hours or less. The national standards, by the way, call for 45 hours of classroom. Why so many? Well, it's because additional classroom time allows teachers to focus on attitude, behavior, and judgment, the things that turn a knowledgeable driver into a safe driver. And those are the things that I believe an online course like driversed.com are not likely to impact. So what is the driversed.com course like? For those of you who are unfamiliar with it, let me just say this. It is an excellent product. It has well-organized content. It is clearly presented with good illustrations. It's got great animations, and it's got excellent videos. It is a very impressive online course. But ultimately, it is limited by what it is. It's over 1,000 PowerPoint slides that kids click through. Some have animations, some have videos. They log on when they want, they resume where they left off, and they click through more slides. They can do so when answering emails, updating Facebook, downloading the latest episode of Jersey Shore, and who knows what else. Teens never have just one application open. There's no local content, no questions and answers, no sharing of experiences, no discussions. Last week's CARE 11 Eyewitness News segment on seatbelt use in outstate Minnesota isn't played. Yesterday's Pioneer Press article about a teen accident can't be read and discussed. Observations from last month's snowstorm, from this Friday's snowstorm, can't be shared. As I said, driversed.com is very good, but it is what it is, and one size fits all. There's no ability to emphasize downtown driving for metro students and country road driving for outstate students. Brainerd students learn the same amount about driving around downtown buses as students who live in St. Paul, rather than Brainerd students getting additional training on the risk unique to pickup trucks, for example. For their Indiana course, driversed.com has a timer on each slide, so the student has to wait until advancing. The timer assures that it takes 30 hours to complete the course. It's a perfectly reasonable precaution. So, for example, a slide is headlined airbag safety. The timer starts at 10 seconds and count down, and the slide reads, try to maintain at least 10 inches between yourself and the steering wheel. Keep your thumbs turned out on the steering wheel, and your eye goes to the timer. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Click. Keep your hands on the 8 and 4 o'clock position or the 9 and 3 o'clock position. Avoid the 10 and 2 o'clock position. 7, 6. Your eye darts to the slide count. Slide 31 out of 87. 46 slides to go. 4, 3, 2, 1. Click. And now you do that 1,000 times and for 30 hours. And now ask yourself if that's likely to change a teen's attitude, behavior, or judgment. And when they are watching a video on distracted driving and their instant message screen blinks, are they likely to read it? Maybe even answer back? Will they minimize the screen and quickly check the basketball scores? Who would even know? I know they're not doing that in our classrooms. Can they get 32 questions right after the 30 hours of this on the 40-question permit test? Probably they can, but that's not the primary purpose of 30 hours. Will 1,000-plus slides over 30 hours impact their maturity, their propensity for risk-taking, their sense of invulnerability, their hazard recognition, their decision-making? I'm just not convinced that it would. So what is the solution? How does Minnesota get the convenient option of online education, which, like Senator Howe, I want to offer our students, and still deliver local content and teacher impact? Well, good old Minnesota, we've already invented that wheel. There are existing statutes related to online education, statutes which require that online classes be teacher-led. Therefore, my proposal to you is to amend this Senate file 615, to make it clear that you mean a teacher-led class. What I've distributed to you, and it looks like this, is one such amendment, which essentially replaces the words internet-based theory driver education program with teacher-led online learning program. My language simply copies terminology in Minnesota statutes 124D.095, which deals with online learning. I believe a change like this will address both the convenience of online driver's education and the impact of being teacher-led. It will reflect Minnesota's standards for online education, and in doing so, it will be a Minnesota solution, not a California solution. And it is a change I believe driving educators will support. Safeway certainly would. Alternatively, if this bill goes through as it's written, driver's education will be the only class Minnesota high school students can take that is not teacher-led. All the others are. But unlike all the other online high school courses, this is the only one teaching them something that can get them killed. And I just don't think that's wise. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Nick, any questions for these testifiers? Okay, next up is Mr. Schildkraut. And also, is there a representative from Education Minnesota? Welcome to the committee, if you'd identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rod Schildkraut. I am the Vice President of Marketing and Retail Sales for AAA Minneapolis, but I am also responsible for our many traffic safety programs. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to weigh in on this important legislation. The AAA clubs of Minnesota believe that an online component for driver education can be an appropriate and effective, if well done, aspect of driver education, and most importantly, if there is effective oversight. AAA, as you know, has been very actively engaged in efforts to better prepare novice drivers for many years. I think you would also agree that driver training is about much more than teaching people about our laws in order to pass a state exam. It's about teaching them to safely operate a piece of very sophisticated equipment that could and often does take someone's life when not used properly and safely. AAA is concerned by some existing online driver education courses that we believe are very ineffective. We are concerned by the experiences of some states managing this education format with, in our view, insufficient oversight and coordination of online driver education. In terms of course quantity and quality, there are at least 40 different current providers of online driving schools, probably more. Some are, in our view, very poor substitutes for the classroom experience. Why? Because they have very low student engagement, and another reason, they have very little, if any, ways to prevent fraud. For example, one course recently studied by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA, apparently uses the same questions for final exams for for all final exams, though the order of the questions varied from test to test. Another had at most two versions. Again, according to NHTSA, other common issues or challenges with some online providers included highly abbreviated training, examples of which a couple of hours to complete the entire course, or no need to take the course at all, you just go right to the test. Some offer answers to the tests that are readily available through online forums. Some are hindered by insufficient identity verification, which can lead to fraud. Conversely, some courses, like the forward-thinking driversed.com program, appear to be highly interactive, loaded with a lot of rich multimedia content, some with chat features, and acceptable levels of security. DPS is clearly the expert in this field, and driver education is a public safety issue. It's worth noting that in California, the provision that allowed internet-based driver training made it possible for some online driving schools to register as private secondary schools and thus circumvent the normal oversight procedures of the California Department of Motor Vehicles, the agency in charge of driver education. Lastly, we suggest the committee consider delaying the effective date of this program to allow the department, DPS, adequate time to develop proper safeguards and program quality assurance measures. A delay could also provide current driving schools ample time to develop quality online driving school curricula. In summary, we have concerns with the bill in its current format due to its lack of quality assurance and effective oversight. While the concept is certainly worth pursuing, preserving the integrity of our excellent classroom programs in Minnesota through this format must be a priority. We hope appropriate time and effort is taken to do this the right way. We have opened channels of communication with the bill's authors and would like to work with them and him on measures that would help ensure the effectiveness of any future online driver education program in Minnesota. I would now be happy to take any questions.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at the bill, line 1.23, an internet-based theory driver education program that is approved by the commissioner. And so we all want oversight that it's done correctly, and it has to be approved by the commissioner to even operate. So I'm just wondering what your concern is there.
In one of the some of the original language, it did not specify that, but we're happy to hear that it certainly does at this point.
Senator, thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. For the record, Jody Boer with Education Minnesota. And I'd like to speak to you actually in two capacities today, if I could. First and foremost, in my professional capacity as a lobbyist for Education Minnesota. And as I sat and listened through all of this, I at the end of my testimony, I'd like to share in a personal capacity my opinions about this from a personal perspective, if I could. So first and foremost, I've listened and heard supporters of the bill talk a lot about cost and convenience. And while those may be important and need to be considered, I don't think this is the place for that. And I think that safety outweighs cost and convenience. Also, there's been talk about status quo versus being innovative. And certainly there are times, and it exists today, where online serves a great purpose, and we all know that. I do not think this is the area for that. We share some of the concerns that have been raised by others who have spoke previously, so I won't repeat those. I would really implore us to stop and think about who it is we are talking about here today. These are our kids, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, and a side note, as a mother of two boys, I can say that it concerns me what we're talking about here today. Also, there's been mention about security that's in place for this program, but I do think we need to remember that they could be taking this test in a room and someone could certainly be helping them. The security isn't going to prevent that. Or someone could actually be taking the test for the student. So that's important to just be mindful of, I think. Our main concern at Education Minnesota, in addition to the safety, is the quality of instruction, which has been talked about. In the classroom setting, as we all know, a dialogue can take place and real discussion about, real-life events. The kids can come in from the weekend and talk about driving experiences they've had. Well, what if, and this is what I ran into, and share that discussion with a teacher. You can't get that from an online. Also, it's been mentioned the Department of Public Safety 2009 study has been talked about and mentioned here a couple of times. I think it's important to realize that they also identified areas that contribute to teen crashes. Some of those are immaturity, lack of driving experience, high propensity for risk-taking, and deficient decision-making. And these, again, are not things that can be addressed on a test, but they can be in a classroom, and those are very important. We do not support this bill. Now I would just like to add a personal note, and again, as I sat and listened to this, I thought I can't not say this. I have lost two brothers in my life to car crashes. And so I just have to add that personal note that I don't think this is an area where we can shortcut at all. And while online might teach them, it won't do it enough. And so I just don't think this is an area, I apologize, but where we can take a risk, because one life is one too many. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. I appreciate it.
Okay. Any questions? Well, Senator Howell, we are going to lay Senate File 499 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus policy bill. So just to let you know that, and do you have any further
Sure, comments? I've got some closing comments. You know, I think the discussion is good, and you've seen by many of the testifiers today, Minnesota remains an island among itself. I don't know if we feel any safer or any less safe when we drive in Wisconsin or we drive in Iowa or we drive in North Dakota or South Dakota, and they offer online. And I think the concerns about security and safety, I met with Ms. Pat McCormick. When this first came to me, I reached out to the Department of Public Safety. And my only question for them was, can we do this safely? And if we can do this safely, then we should do it. And that was my only question to them. And they believe it can be done safely. The Commissioner of Public Safety will be in charge of it. I think... I don't know. I'm carrying this bill this year. We've been discussing online driver's education for many years, and I don't know how long the status quo is going to hold us back. You know, we need to move forward. We need to use technology. Don't forget that we're going to have a lot of one-on-one with the behind-the-wheel portion. There's a lot of differences in the level of driver's education. You know, I would say that somewhere in the state of Minnesota right now, we have the best classroom teacher for driver's education. But conversely, somewhere in the state of Minnesota, we have the worst classroom instructor for driver's education. And to argue against online training, you'd have to argue that that falls below or outside, that it's an outlier in somewhere in that continuum. And I would suggest that the way the kids learn today, we need to embrace technology. We need to move forward. And I would strongly encourage you, Mr. Chair, to continue to put this in the omnibus bill. I think the time is right. I believe that we're just allowing this as an option. It's not making it a mandate. There is no time frame for DPS to approve these programs. But I think it can be done safely, and I think we do. It's time that we move forward. We have the technology available. It would allow, and we are going to be hearing, I'm not sure if we're going to be hearing it here, but we also have the Tyler's Law that's coming up, and that's to teach people on during driver's education about the effects of carbon monoxide poisoning. With online training, that module can be put right into place, and so we can use that technology. Currently, you're going to have to go to all the instructors throughout the state to get them educated on the new laws and and it'll take time. Whereas with online training and using that technology, that could be plugged in right into place. So, again, I just want to thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I seriously appreciate your strong support of moving this legislation forward.
Senator Dibble, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think Senator Howell expressed all of the points that I was going to make as well. I think that we've had some compelling and interesting testimony on both sides of this bill, and I think I learned a lot even though I carried this bill previously. And some excellent points were raised, and so I think laying the bill on the table for possible inclusion and perhaps giving us a little bit of time to maybe incorporate some of the thoughts that both the proponents and the opponents raised is probably a welcome opportunity. But Senator Howe, I think, put it best when he said we absolutely don't want to move forward on something that's going to diminish or inhibit safety for young people. We've made a lot of progress in the state on that front, and we certainly don't want to take a step back. I think the evidence is pretty strong that online driver's education, the classroom component done well, is as good and perhaps in some cases better than in-person classroom style training. The fact that the Commissioner of Public Safety is actively involved, Senator Gazelka's point, is important. The fact that there is no timeline and time frame, but maybe delayed effective date would be useful. I don't know. Might be important. So there's an opportunity for a stakeholder gathering so that we can make sure that we are doing our due diligence as policymakers. But I think this is a good idea and is worthy of our consideration and our support.
Thank you. Ms. McCormick, did you have some additional comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. And I just wanted to reiterate that, yes, the Department of Public Safety believes that that online driver education can be successful, but we also believe strongly, as we stated in our report, and I wanted to make sure that we are able to make that report available to all the committee members because we did this report in 2009, and so it may not have been available to all of the committee members, so that we can send that electronic version to you so that you all have it. But specifically, we talk about the fact that we need to make sure that we would exercise greater level of control over content and delivery, especially in this kind of a program. And so as a result, that is one of the main issues that we talked about, the need for rulemaking, and that certainly would take some time before we would be able to implement any new program. But we believe that there have been many suggestions and thoughts on the programs today, and certainly we believe that we can collaborate and try to put together an effective program. There are some costs associated with that, and I know that's not under discussion today, but I just wanted to reiterate the fact that we do believe that we will need to look at all avenues in terms of making sure that we're successfully meeting the needs of our students and making sure that we're promoting public safety in our future drivers.
Thank you. And just to wrap up, I want to reiterate what Senator Dibble said. We are in historic territory as far as the number of traffic deaths that we don't have. We have really brought down the number of traffic deaths on our roads in the state of Minnesota, and we don't want to do anything to compromise our continued goal to reduce those further. So I appreciate Senator Howell bringing this bill forward, and Looking forward to the collaboration that you will have with the department and others as we continue to look at that. And that's why I say we'll lay Senate File 499 on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So that'll give you some time to work on it here just a little bit. So any other discussion, questions? All right. Thank you, Senator Howe.
Sure.
Members. That, there being no other business, we stand adjourned.